Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymeer Church of Christ.
Scripture reading this morning is from the 27th chapter of Matthew, verses 27 through 31. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him and then twisted together a thorn of crowns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand and knelt in front of him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews," they said. They spit upon him. They took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put on his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him.
Good morning. Andrew's away at the retreat, and I'm sort of glad he is. Because that means I get an opportunity to preach. But don't worry, he'll be back next Sunday. It's interesting where motivation comes from. Sometimes it seems like we get motivation or inspiration in the strangest of places. And some of mine over the past few weeks has come from yard work, of all places. And, you know, spring is here, though this last week felt more like summer. But that means we're out mowing and mulching and doing all that stuff that we have to do every year. But I think one of the most painful things that I've been doing the last couple of weeks is I've been trying to cut off limbs and push back or cut out thorn bushes and things like that. And it seems like thorn bushes can just grow up over a night's time. It seems like they grow up really quickly. But as I've been cutting back thorn bushes and hauling them off, I've had lots of cuts on my hands and found it's kind of a painful job to do. Even last week, I was out mowing, and as I was mowing, something was sticking in the bottom of my foot, and I took my shoe off, and somehow a little tiny thorn had gotten into the bottom of my sock, and it was just amazing the pain that a little tiny thorn can cause. But I started thinking about that idea of thorns and the pain that they cause, and that made me start thinking about thorns in the Bible. And I believe there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from the thorns in the Bible. And I'd like for us to think about that this morning. It's interesting, you do just a quick Google search, you're going to find that there's more than 50 references to thorns in the Bible. Some of those references to thorns in the Bible are going to be references to literal thorns. You know, for example, in John 19, those soldiers, they didn't twist together a crown of something that was similar to thorns, but those were actual, long, sharp, painful thorns that they pushed down into the Savior's skull. But at the same time, some of the references in the Bible to thorns are in a symbolic way. We think of 2 Corinthians 12 when Paul mentioned his thorn in the flesh. That was not a literal thorn, but it was representative of something difficult that he had to endure. Sometimes we have thorns in our lives that we face and have to endure. But this morning I'd like for us to think about Bible thorns and some lessons that we can learn from them. I'd like for us this morning to think about the thorns of creation and the thorns of Canaan and the thorns of care. And finally, as Gilbert read to us, we'll think about the thorns of Calvary. Let's begin this morning thinking about the thorns of creation. I believe for all the way from childhood all the way to adulthood, we learn about the story of creation in our Bible classes. Maybe we learn on different levels. However, I believe one common conclusion, regardless of the age, is that the creation story is a beautiful account. As we go through studying about creation, it's amazing to think about God suspending this watery planet in darkness, suspending it from nothing. And to think about day two, how He separated the waters of the earth from the waters that surrounded the earth and its atmosphere. And then we see, you can visualize dry land appearing out of nothing and the vegetation and the trees that bear fruit and plants springing up. And then the sun and the moon and the stars and water life and birds of the air. And then finally it culminating with animal life and the creation of man. It's a beautiful account that we read in Genesis chapter 1. But as we move forward into Genesis chapter 2, it's even more beautiful that this portrait that's painted in that chapter, we get this vision of a tropical paradise as we read about the Garden of Eden and man being placed there. We read about this mist springing up each day to water the fruit or to water the plants so they would bring forth fruits. We read about rivers flowing from the middle of the garden, and there's man living in this tropical paradise. And in Genesis chapter 2, verses 16 and 17, man's told that it's all yours. You can live here. You can eat. You can enjoy it. You can stay here, but there's one tree that you can't eat of, and that's the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Then as we move forward again into Genesis chapter 3, we see quite a contrast between Genesis chapter 3 and the paradise of Genesis 2. We see Satan tempting Adam and Eve to sin, to disobey, and they eat of that fruit that was forbidden of them. And as a result of that, Eden is lost. And man's introduced to thorns and thistles. He's going to have to toil and labor for what he's going to eat. But man's introduced to thorns and thistles. That's the consequences, or represents the consequences of his sin. Notice with me in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 and 18. And to Adam he said, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you." The consequence of his sin was that Eden was taken away from them, or they were taken away from Eden. But thorns and thistles represent the consequences. But let's notice some lessons that we learn from the thorns of creation. When we look at the thorns of creation, we notice that thorns are used to teach us that there are consequences for man's disobedience. You know, the world tells us that sin makes things better. But that's not the case. Sin's never made life better. It may bring some momentary pleasure, but it's not going to bring long-term satisfaction. Sin caused the loss of their paradise home. Again, that amazing portrait that we read in Genesis chapter 2 is lost because of disobedience. What do we stand to lose from our disobedience? What are the consequences that we could face from our disobedience? But we also learn that these thorns remind us that the way of the sinner is difficult. Again, the world says that sin's good, that sin makes life easier. I don't know if you've been around folks that sometimes, occasionally we're around folks, it just seems like lies just flow so easily from them. But again, the pleasures of sin are momentary. But the difficulties of sin are often last a lifetime. In Proverbs 13:15 it says, "Good sense wins favor, but the ways of the treacherous is their ruin." Sin makes life more difficult. Or as Paul said in Galatians 6:7, "Do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever one sows, that he will also reap." So there's consequences, and life's difficult because of sins. We see that in the life of Adam and Eve, and I believe we can see that even in our own lives from past mistakes that we've made. But as we continue, let's continue forward tracing thorns through the Bible. Let's think about the thorns of Canaan and some lessons that we can learn there. I believe the story of Israel and Canaan is, in my opinion, is probably one of the saddest stories in the Bible. God has had to drag this nation out of captivity. And they've been fighting him every step of the way. They've rebelled against their leaders. They've rebelled against Moses and Aaron and Miriam. They've rebelled against God. They've even gone so far that they longed to go back into captivity, as if that was better than what laid ahead of them. God has had to drag them all the way to the edge of the River Jordan. And he's given them one command regarding the Canaanites that lived in that promised land. And that was to drive them out. Just drive them out of the land. Don't intermarry with them. Don't worship their gods. Just completely drive them out of the land. Why? Because if you leave the Canaanites in the land, they're going to become a thorn in your side. Numbers 33 and 55, "But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land where you dwell." So just drive them out. Don't intermarry with them. Don't worship their gods. Just drive them out. And what did Israel do? Judges 1:28, they did not drive them out completely. Or Judges 2:11 and 12, "Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals, and they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt." The Canaanites became a constant thorn in their sides that led to their disobedience. They intermarried with them. They did not drive them out. They worshiped their gods. They disobeyed the Lord because they did not follow His instructions. A constant thorn in their sides that led to their disobedience. Ultimately, it would even lead to them being carried away again into captivity. But I believe there's some lessons we can learn from the thorns of Canaan as well. When we think of the thorns of Canaan, we learn not to compromise with the world. And I think this is a hard one. Someone asked me the other day what I thought one of the biggest challenges to the church is today, and I said, I think it's worldliness. We quote Romans 12:2, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." But I think worldliness is maybe the biggest threat to the church today. You can notice changes going on in various congregations. It's interesting that certain things become acceptable in churches, and it just happens to coincide with certain sinful practices all of a sudden being acceptable in the world. We say that we live in the world, but we're not of the world, but I think we're all in danger of being of the world when we love this world too much. John said not to love the world or the things that are in it. He said, "If any man loves the world, then the love of the Father is not in him." 2 John 2:15. So I think we learn from the thorns of Canaan to be careful not to love this world. We ought to love heaven, and that's what we ought to be working towards. We learn not to compromise with religious error. Rather than drive the nations out, the Israelites left the nations there, and what did they do? They became overwhelmed or overcome with this constant desire to be just like the nations that were around them. Sometimes I think that we're in danger, that New Testament Christians may be in danger of being overcome with a desire to be like the denominations that are around us or that are among us. When we need to hold tight to truth, we need to try to be the church that's in the Bible, not the church that's down the street. Paul said in Galatians 1:8, "But even if another or an angel preach unto you a gospel that is contrary to the one that we preach to you, let him be accursed." We need to hold tight to truth. We learn from the thorns of Canaan not to compromise with the world. What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong, and it stays that way. But we also learn not to compromise with religious error. We need to hold tight, hold fast to trying to be the church that's in the New Testament. Let's continue our trace of the thorns through the Bible this morning. Let's think now about some thorns of care and some lessons we can learn from the thorns of care. In Matthew chapter 13, Jesus shared with us the parable of the sower. He said that some seeds fell on the path and the birds came and ate up those seeds. He said that some seeds fell among rocky ground or rocky soil. There wasn't enough soil, so the seeds quickly shot up or sprang up. But then the sun came out, and just as quickly as it had sprung up, it withered away. But then he said some seeds fell among thorns, and those thorns grew up and choked the seeds. Jesus went on to explain that parable in Matthew 13, verse 22. He said, "As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful." I believe we all have cares. We've got so many things that are on our hearts, that are on our minds. There's probably a lot of us here even this morning that struggle to give full attention because there's so many things that are weighing on us, so many burdens. We've got so many things that are unavoidable in this life that are bothering us. But we've also got so many cares that are avoidable, but yet we elevate them to a position to where they become distractions. If we're not careful, the thorns of this world's cares are going to choke the Word right out of us. But think about some of the optional cares that we have in our lives. Things that are not sinful. Things that are good and helpful to us. But sometimes if they become too prevalent in our lives, and if they choke the Word out of our lives, then they do become sin. Our jobs. Working is a good thing. You know, Paul said, if you don't work, you don't eat. So I believe we all agree that work is a good thing. But if they regularly take us away from the worship services of the church, or if they regularly prevent us from joining in the work of the church, then jobs can become a sinful thing. And if that's the case, then it's time to start looking for a new job. What about our recreation? Our hobbies, or young people with athletics. As our kids are getting older, it's amazing now to realize the amount of time that goes into athletics. But also maybe our outdoors recreations, our outdoors activities. You know, I think all of these things are good things. Paul said that bodily exercise is of some value. These things can be wholesome. These things can be helpful. They can be helpful to our health. Yet, if they choke out the godliness from our lives, then they've become sin to us. If these things choke out all the time that we could be spending with our families, if they choke out all the time that we could be spending with our church family, if they choke out the time that we could be spending on the things that God has commanded us to do, then they've become sin to us. They've become thorns in our lives. What about education? You know, learning is a good thing. I believe we all support good education and study. We want our children to be educated. You know, we live in a sports-crazed culture, especially in the Southeast. It's a football-crazed culture. Sometimes I tell my friends, maybe I'm wrong in this, but I tell them, you know, when my kids are adults, I really want them to look back on that PhD program that they went through. For some reason, I really don't want them to be adults looking back on their high school sports or high school athletics. Maybe I'm wrong with that, but as I think about that, I think that even school and study can take Christians away from what we're supposed to be doing. School and study can take us away from spiritual study and growth. How many of us studied for Bible class this morning? Probably not very many of us. Because we got so many other cares that take up so much more time in our lives. You know, Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes, we know he searched everywhere for happiness, for what life was all about. And in the end of it, he didn't say the whole conclusion is to study and make good grades regardless of what it chokes out of your life. He said, fear God and keep His commandments. And that's even more important than education. But those are some things that, just things that are not sinful, things that we all care about, but sometimes we elevate them to a position that maybe they shouldn't be at. But what about some unavoidable concerns? There's also some unavoidable cares that we have to face in this world, things that trouble us. Paul in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 10, he described them as weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. These are things that we endure. Things that we have to get through, but we still have to continue doing what God's told us to do. You know, our health is one of those that sometimes, from time to time, we struggle with. Nobody wants to get sick. Nobody wants a disease. Nobody wants any other health difficulty. In 2 Corinthians 12, Paul talked about this thorn in the flesh that kept him humble. You know, we don't know what that thorn in the flesh was. Maybe it was a vision problem, as some have said. We don't really know. But we do learn some good things from Paul about the way he handled his thorn in the flesh, this unavoidable care and concern. We know he went to the right source about it. We know he prayed to God to remove it from him. Maybe we should do that. We spend so much time going to the wrong sources with our concerns, remember several years ago, a friend of mine had something that was really bothering him. And he went to another friend of mine and asked for some advice. And that friend said, "Well, first, have you talked to God about it?" And he said, "Well, no." He said, "Well, have you talked to your wife about it?" And he said, "No." He said, "Why in the world would you come to me first?" We learn from Paul to go to the right source. But we also learn from Paul to accept the answer that we received. He didn't receive the answer that he expected. But he still continued to press forward to do what God had commanded him to do. That thorn in the flesh was a constant reminder to Paul of his need for God. It's amazing how he said it kept him humble. He also went on in 2 Corinthians 12 to say that he could boast in his weakness. Why could he boast in it? He could boast in it because he knew that he was a weak man. He knew that he could not take the gospel into all the world without God's strength. He knew that it was God's strength, in spite of his weaknesses, that allowed him to still accomplish the task that was set before him. I believe there's some lessons we can learn from the thorns of care. I believe we learn not to allow the optional things of this world to become thorns in our lives. We learn not to let jobs and materialism, recreation, education, whatever it may be, not to let those things choke the word out of us. But we learn to seek first the kingdom of heaven and His righteousness, and He's going to take care of everything else, Matthew 6:33. We also learn, when we think about the thorns of care, maybe the thorns of unavoidable cares, we learn how to properly respond and to grow stronger from the thorns we face in life. You know, it's so easy to allow these unavoidable cares, these thorns, to become crutches in our lives. Allow them to become excuses to not do the things that we've been commanded to do. In spite of his weakness, Paul was still able to accomplish it because of God's strength. I believe we learn not to let our thorns prevent us from doing what God's commanded us to do. Well, let's notice in the final place, as we continue to trace this idea of thorns in the Bible, let's go into Matthew chapter 27 and think about the thorns of Calvary. This is why we're all here this morning. We're here because Jesus died on the cross for us. We're here because we love Him. We recognize that I should have been on that cross. Jesus didn't belong to be in that middle cross. I did. Matthew 27:27-31. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the governor's headquarters. And they gathered the whole battalion before him, and they stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. And twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and put a reed in his right hand. And kneeling before him, they mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they spit on him and took a reed and struck him on the head. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the robe and put his own clothes on him and led him away to crucify him. I think when we read this scene, it's the epitome of humiliation as Jesus is being mocked for being the Son of God. He's being mocked for being our Savior. Now, he's just been severely whipped with that Roman whip. Sometimes we've heard preachers describe it, how in that day Roman whips would have had several different pieces of leather strips at the end of it. And there would have been bones from goats and other sharp objects embedded in those leather strips, so that when it struck the person's back, those objects would literally grip into the skin, so that when it was pulled back, it'd be excruciating pain as flesh would be pulled away from the body with it. But here's the only man to ever live who didn't deserve to die on the cross. And he's the one receiving that treatment. You deserve to be on the cross. I deserve to be on the cross. I don't know how many of us are here this morning. Maybe 500. There deserve to be 500 crosses there. But Jesus didn't deserve to be on one of them. He's lying there in pain from being whipped. And he's being mocked for being the Son of God. They're treating him as if he's royalty, but yet treating him in the complete opposite way you would treat royalty. And they put a robe on him and a, a reed or a scepter in his hand, and they start spitting on him. But then it says they twisted together a crown of thorns and pushed it onto his head. I was reading this week about those who have actually tried to pinpoint, they've studied the thorns that are found in Palestine and tried to pinpoint exactly what thorn it was, and they're unable to do that, but the scholars have narrowed it down to their two most likely thorns, and the way they described those thorns were that they were just as hard as nails. I know when we think about Jesus being crucified, the cross has really become that symbol of pain that Christians have turned into a good thing, and sometimes we'll see folks wearing a chain necklaces and things like that, but the crown of thorns is a similar symbol to us as well. It's a symbol of pain as we think about them sinking into the Lord's head. And as I read some medical experts and their take on it, they described how it would have felt like nails being pushed into his skull. They said he would have felt intense pain. Of course, there was technical terms for it, but he would have felt intense pain in the front of his head and on the side of his head. But they said especially inside of his ears, it would have felt like his whole face was on fire, but it couldn't be quenched. And I just try to imagine that, and I can't really come close. I remember back when I was in college, I was working on a construction job one summer, and I remember at the end of the day, maybe we'd been painting, we'd used this little can of mineral spirits to wash our hands. But I remember one day I carelessly didn't pay attention, and I washed my hands with the can of that acid-based stripper. And I remember my hands just burning. The only way to quench it was to constantly keep them under running cold water. But eventually it went away. But that's the closest I can come to imagining the intense pain that Jesus felt from those thorns pressing into his nerves and into his skull. But of course, that crown of thorns is symbolic to those of us who understand Genesis chapter 3. To those of us that understand that thorns came into existence as a consequence of man's sin, as a consequence of my sin. Jesus is wearing a crown of thorns that shows him bearing the consequences of my sins because he took my place. I think there's some lessons that we can learn from the thorns of Calvary. When we think about Jesus on that cross, when we think about that crown of thorns on his head, I believe we realize the depth of, or we attempt to realize the depth of pain that he experienced there on my cross. We deserve to be there, but yet God showed his love for us, and that while we're still sinners, Jesus died for us, Romans 5:8. We also realize that God made grace available to us through that sacrifice. The grace of God has appeared and brings salvation to all people, Titus 2, verse 11. How do we respond to the thorns of Calvary? How do we respond this morning to those thorns of Calvary? I hope that we respond in repentance, in turning and changing, asking for forgiveness. And that may be a public thing, that may be a private thing, but that's what we're here for this morning. But also, I hope we respond to God's grace this morning, because that's something else that was made available on the cross. I hope we respond to God's grace this morning in obedience. Jesus died on my cross. Jesus died on your cross. And He's calling you to die to sin this morning. He's calling you to repent and to confess that He's God's Son. Jesus was buried in the tomb, and this morning He's calling you to be buried with Him in baptism for the forgiveness of sins. Jesus rose from the dead, rose from the grave. And this morning He's calling you to rise from baptism and to walk in the light and newness of life and not to walk in darkness anymore. Will you respond to the thorns of Calvary? Will you respond to Jesus' grace this morning? Won't you come right now as we stand, as we sing?